Medical Matters on Talk About, brought to you in association with the Bon Secours Hospital Tralee, celebrating 200 years of the Bon Secours mission.
Now it's time for Medical Matters, and we're taking your general queries this week. And let's get in touch and talk to Dr. Eamon Shanahan. How are you, Eamon?
I'm doing grand, Crather. We had tons of them left over last week.
We had tons of them left over. We did indeed, and more have come in today. And we might start with this one from Garrod, and Garrod sounds kind of worried. This is his issue. He has what he describes as a sort of growth on his right nostril. It's white and it has gotten bigger. Most of the time it causes him no problem, but once in a while it gets very sore. He mentioned it to his wife. She got worried and is afraid it's some kind of a tumour. So now he's terrified. But he says, I am reluctant to say it to the doctor, because if it's nothing and everybody has these, I'll feel like a right idiot.
OK, so let's start with the last point, work forwards. There is never, ever such a thing as a silly question, or that people should be concerned that they could present anything to their GP. Absolutely, definitely, we're not going to be judging people. And the thing about it is that I go back then to the earlier point, is this is something that should be checked out. Growths of any sort, new growths of any sort, especially ones that get occasionally sore or bleed, are ones that we would be concerned about. Now, what we didn't hear, I think, was what Garrod or Jared's age is. But irrespective of age, it's something he should get checked out. This is something that will need to be investigated further. So please, please, please go and talk to your GP about it.
Yeah, so it's pretty much not normal to have a kind of a growth on your nostril.
Definitely not. Yeah. No, it could have. It might be something benign, like a wart or something like that. And if that's the case, that's grand. But it's what we're lacking here. What our listeners, what Garrod is missing, what his wife is missing, is peace of mind, is appropriate assurance.
Exactly. And you know, it's a shame that people would be loath to go to their GP because out of fear of feeling stupid. You know, as you said, it's so important to stress that.
Yeah, never a problem, never an issue.
A 50-year-old female says she had a consultant appointment recently following irregular bleeding with clots. She's 50. The doctor told her that she should have her ovaries removed. She's already had a hysterectomy and she's wondering, what do you think?
Okay, now, there's a couple of things that don't add up there. If by definition she's had a hysterectomy, she shouldn't be having periods at all anywhere. And so if she is having periods, having had a hysterectomy, one would then seriously question, where is the bleeding coming from? I think there is a communication issue here. The very fact that a consultant has suggested to her that she should have the ovaries removed, that's a pretty major step. And I think that there's a question there of having this adequately explained to you. I'm a great believer that people should be given both verbal and written communication. So in other words, that they can be given an information sheet that they can read at their in their own time. And indeed, if they want, they can share it with other people to read it with them, so as that they get a better understanding of what it is that they're going through. But as I said before, the fact that our listener has already had a hysterectomy means by definition she shouldn't be having any bleeding of any sort. So therefore, there is a cause of concern there anyway.
We have a 54-year-old lady next, Eamon. She's suffering from lightheadedness. Is that the right way to say it?
Lightheadedness,
lightheadedness, and nausea and dizzy spells. And she's wondering, what could this be?
Okay, a couple of possibilities. One of the things that first come to mind is that it may reflect some sort of an issue with the middle ear, or the inner ear, I should say. So what is the inner ear? The inner ear, that there are two organs there. One is the cochlea, which is the thing that converts sound pressure waves into electrical signals. And then above that, you've got things called the semicircular canals, which are kind of an internal gyroscope. We have one on top of each ear. The problem is that if they get inflamed, they can give misleading signals to the brain, which makes the person feel lightheaded and dizzy, and in turn can actually get a type of motion sickness and they can feel nauseated. So there could be something either intrinsically wrong with the semicircular canals, these things that give us your sense of balance, or that there might be something pressing on them from the outside. The other possibility that would be there is that our listener might be a bit low on blood, that they might be a bit anemic. One way or the other, it's something they should go and talk to their own GP about.
Now, this next lady sounds like she's in a lot of pain. She's 52 and she fell and hurt her knee 8 months ago. She was on crutches for a few days. But it has got worse in the meantime. She's had an MRI which showed she's a torn meniscus in her knee with a bit of fluid and the start of arthritis. She's still waiting to see an orthopaedic doctor. And she says, it seems like the bone is clicking in and out of place. It's very painful when it flares up. Is there anything I can do in the meantime?
Okay, there's a couple of things. Firstly, simple analgesics like plain paracetamol can be of benefit. You could use an anti-inflammatory. The only difficulty is that the over-the-counter anti-inflammatories, which are okay for mild pain, probably aren't going to cut it with something that's as uncomfortable and sore as this. I presume you've already had a chat with your GP about this. They can prescribe reasonably effective anti-inflammatory medications to try and help relieve the discomfort and soreness for you. The other bit pending you're being seen by an orthopaedic surgeon is see a physio. There's a lot of stuff that physios can do to help alleviate discomfort and soreness. Part of the problem with any joint injury is that when a joint gets injured, people will naturally not want to use the joint. But the trouble with that in turn is it can lead to weakness and wasting of the muscles around the joint, which unfortunately has the effect of making the underlying problem worse, causing the discomfort and soreness to get worse. So pending being seen by the orthopaedic surgeon there, and particularly as you've had the MRI done already, bring the result of the MRI to your physio, have a chat with them and see what they can do to try and help alleviate or at least keep your symptoms stable until such time as you can see the orthopaedic surgeon.
A lady says, I'm going on Accutane, A-C-C-U-T-A-N-E, in March. I presume that's some kind of medication.
Yeah.
She says, I was told to start the pill for the month before and all during the treatment. I'm nervous for the effects on my mood. Does the pill affect mood or cause a lot of clots?
Okay, so there's a couple of bits and pieces there. First and foremost, the medication that she will be put on is actually called Roaccutane, or R-O-A-C-C-U-T-A-N-E, and it's a very potent treatment for severe acne. Now, it is an effective treatment for acne, and where somebody has scarring acne, acne that's going to leave permanent scars, it is the most effective treatment for the acne. The only thing is that when you're taking the Roaccutane, it's really, really, really important that you do not conceive. And that's the reason why you're being advised to use effective contraception before, during, and it's for a little while after you've been taking this medication. It could be the pill. There are other ways of family planning of contraception. And maybe that's a conversation you should be having with your GP, because there are other ways of preventing conception while you're taking this medication. Addressing the issue of the concerns about mood and other issues to do with the pill, yes, there is a very slight rise in the risk of clotting when you are taking the pill, but there are things you can do to try and help mitigate that. The main thing really being, don't get dehydrated. With regard to mood change, there is weak, and it's actually weak evidence of association between the pill and mood change. The vast majority of women experience no change in mood whatsoever when taking the pill.
Now, one from a gentleman next, and he's 45, and he says he was diagnosed with an underactive thyroid. He's been complaining for a number of years of feeling tired, and he's wondering, is this related to the underactive thyroid?
It could very well be. So treatment of the underactive thyroid, now there are a couple of things that can cause underactive thyroid, and that probably needs to be sussed out before either before or during your treatment. But the treatment of the underactive thyroid is very simple. You replace that which is missing, you give the person the thyroid hormone, and you give back what they don't have. Now, once you start in the treatment, retrospectively, you'll be able to tell whether or not it's the underactive thyroid was causing you to be tired all this time along. The reason being that once you start in the treatment, once the thyroid deficiency has been addressed, if your tiredness disappears, well, there's your answer. If the tiredness doesn't disappear, then there's something else causing the tiredness.
Yeah. And I know that GPs get people complaining of tiredness all the time, don't they?
All the time.
Yeah, it's probably the most common thing you hear, I'd say.
One of the most common symptoms, yes.
Now, this next one I think will resonate with a lot of the women out there. This listener says, will you please ask the doctor, why am I so cold all the time? I have oil on and the fire on constantly. My children think I'm mad. I had a hip operation 6 weeks ago. but this is going on for a long time. Had my bloods done and they were all clear, but I am on blood thinners and I'm wondering, could this be the cause of feeling cold all the time?
It may well be. Now, of course, we always have to ask the question, why are you on the blood thinners in the first place? It could possibly be that you were taking the blood thinners after having the hip operation to prevent your developing a clot as a result of the hip operation. But if you've been taking the blood thinners for longer, as in before the operation, you'd have to ask the question, why are you taking the blood thinners in the first place? Blood thinners are most frequently used in conditions where you have an irregular heartbeat, and if you have an irregular heartbeat, it in turn may lead to a reduced output from the heart, and that in turn may lead you to be feeling tired all the time or feeling cold all the time. I think the best thing to do, this one where you need to go in and have a sit down and a proper discussion with the GP. Now, it may be that you need to ask the GP to set extra time aside for you so as that you can address all your issues and work through all the possibilities and have a discussion with them as to what is the potential cause for your feeling cold all the time, and then formulate a plan of action as to how you're going to address whatever issues that are there.
Now, Helen has an unusual one, and it's a question about her friend, and she's saying, will you ask the doctor about my friend? He's in his 70s. He has a swollen red hand. It's not gout. I'm just wondering, what could it be? It's there since the summer. He was on antibiotics, but it's not clearing up.
Yeah, so there's an inflammatory process of some sort going on. The cardinal signs of inflammation, one of the cardinal signs of inflammation is redness of a part, but also you've got pain and loss of function and swelling. So he's got a swollen red hand, which indicates that there probably is some inflammatory process. The question is, what is the inflammation coming from? You're saying definitively it's not gout. I presume that's on the basis of a blood test. And gout is usually associated with quite a lot of pain as well. Clearly, okay, this is the obvious tautology. There is an inflammatory process of some sort going on. It warrants further investigation. It may require the hand to be scanned to try and work out why it is that there is this redness and inflammation there. One way or the other, the redness and swelling is not normal and should be investigated further.
Yes, that sounds kind of worrying as well. A listener says, what does it mean when a doctor tells you there's a rattle in your lung and prescribes antibiotics? A rattle in your
lungs.
Lungs.
All right, so lungs. Essentially, it's merely a description of what the doctor is hearing in your lungs. So there are the biggest airways, which is the trachea, which is the one through which the air goes. Then below that there are the bronchi, and below that there are bronchioles and then alveoli. So there are varying sized tubes as you go down into the depths of the lungs. And if you have phlegm in the bigger airways, it vibrates in the airways, and that will make a sound which your GP has chosen to describe as a rattle. It just indicates that there is phlegm in your chest, most likely due to a bacterial infection, and therefore it would be appropriate to use an appropriate antibiotic.
Okay, so it's not an actual medical condition,
lung. Jesus, no. It's just a description of what they're hearing.
Very good. Eamon, we'll take a break at this point. More questions have come in for you, but we still have room for a few more. So if anyone wants to call Brenda on 066 712 3666, we'd love to hear from you, or indeed 083 300 3300. Now, somebody's been on to say, what's going on in Killorglin? I've been delayed in traffic for a long time. I think we had this before. I gather at least last week somebody texted in with a similar complaint, and I think last week at least they were doing some work on the bridge in Killorglin, and that was causing the hold up. But of course it could be some other reason today. So if anyone has any can shed any light on that, is it just the works that are continuing on the bridge this week, or is there something else going on? Why are there traffic delays in Killorglin? We would like to know. 083 300 3300. Back with more Medical Matters after these.
Medical Matters on Talk About, brought to you in association with the Bon Secours Hospital Tralee, celebrating 200 years of the Bon Secours mission.
Welcome back. We are chatting to Dr. Eamon Shanahan for this week's Medical Matters. He's taking your general queries, and keep those questions coming in on 083 300 3300. This next one is from a 62-year-old female listener, Eamon. She says she's generally in good health but is on blood pressure tablets, and she gives the dosages and the names of the blood pressure tablets which she takes daily. But she says the problem is her left ankle is swollen all the time. She's wondering if it could be fluid retention, and should she see her GP about it?
Okay, so there are some of the blood pressure treatments, and one that's commonly used, a group of drugs called the calcium channel blockers, very effective blood pressure treatments, but are known to cause the side effect of swollen ankles. The only issue is that they tend to cause swelling of both rather than one ankle. The fact that there's one ankle only swollen may or may not be to do with the blood pressure treatment. It might be a problem with the leg itself. I think the answer is yes, please do have a chat with your GP about this to get it checked out.
Okay, swollen ankles can be a lot of things, can't they?
Yes, indeed.
Eamon, another lady, this lady is 61. She recently went to see an audiologist. Now, this term I'm not familiar with. She says, I have a restain in the pocket of my ear, R-E-S-T-A-I-N. Could that be a typo, I wonder?
Nothing. Yeah, I wonder. That could be a spell-checking thing gone wrong as well, too. But keep going anyway.
I keep going anyway. She says, I knew there was something there because I had constant symptoms of sinus, such as pain out my forehead and ringing in my ear. Now I've been told there's a two-year waiting list, private and public.
Yeah. I mean, the reality is that within the county we have two ear, nose and throat specialists. I send up the correction on that. Both of them have huge long waiting lists. And indeed, if you travel around the country, you're going to find that there are similarly long waiting lists. I suggest the best thing to do is have a chat with your own GP. You will almost certainly have to travel further afield if you want to be seen sooner. And they will be able to tell you or check for you where is it that you might be seen sooner. Look, bottom line is that this is something that does warrant the appropriate investigation. The sad fact of life is that we are lacking in ear, nose and throat surgeons. The surgeons that are there are superb, and my family have seen both of them at different times, and I would trust my life with them, but they're enormously busy, hence the reason why you've got the huge long waiting list. So best thing to do, there are other, so you may have to go to Cork or Dublin or wherever to try and be seen sooner.
A caller says, this is a lady caller, I don't know how old she is, but she went to her doctor a few weeks ago with a bad back. The doctor told her that something in her back had slipped down and needed to be pushed back up. Does Eamon know what this could be? Should I get an injection for it? And what does pushing this thing back up entail?
Yeah, good question. Let's start off by saying, firstly, the back is an enormously complex structure that we take no notice of until we run into problems with it. So the back is composed of bones that interdigitate, that kind of lock into each other, are surrounded by multiple muscles, tendons and ligaments. Essentially, our back is a firm but a flexible rod that everything else hangs off. Now, the thing is that as we get older, there is a degree of wear and tear between the bones and the back, and that's just normal wear and tear. If you take MRIs of everybody in their 50s and 60s, you'll see virtually everybody has some degree of wear and tear. The problem is that sometimes one of these structures can move a bit, and that can put extra pressure on the muscles, tendons or ligaments, or indeed nerve endings, and that in turn can cause pain. The difficulty is that there is the whole school of osteopathy and chiropractic, which involve around back manipulation, the thinking being that by manipulating somebody's back, you can move things back into place. The scientists would argue that there is very little evidence for this, and yet at the same time, back manipulation, people will know this, that it does help them. The idea of injections, especially injections into the back, are something that certainly can be used, but there again you're running into huge long waiting lists, because the specific injections you're talking about are injections in near the spine. That these injections are carried out by anesthesiologists who have a particular expertise in what's called pain management, and publicly or privately are looking at absolute minimum 6 months, if not longer, of waiting lists for that. And generally it's only resorted to where somebody has what we call chronic or long term pain. Again, it's a communication issue. Go back to your GP, have a chat with them. What do they mean by having it manipulated back into place? Perhaps they have something specifically in mind, and then take it from there.
Next up, we have a lady in her 30s, Eamon. She has a sensation that she describes as feeling as if there's something stuck in her throat, and it's down in her chest area as well. Yeah. Now, she says she had a throat infection in December and was on antibiotics, and this problem is going on since then. She's fed up with the pain and discomfort. Any advice? What tests could be done to show up what's wrong?
Okay. A couple of things. It might be worthwhile just in the very short term using an over-the-counter antacid preparation like Gaviscon or something like that. Now, the rationale for that is that if there is an inflammation down the esophagus, that'll help relieve it for you. The definitive investigation, it might be something worth considering, is what's called a gastroscopy. Now, gastroscopy, strictly speaking, means putting a camera down into the tummy, but to get to the tummy, you're going to have to pass through the gullet or the esophagus. And if there is an inflammation down inside there, then the gastroscopy will show that up. So that's the investigation of choice. Though it might be worthwhile using a bit of Gaviscon in the short term. It may be that there's a bit of residual fungal infection that's causing the problem, or maybe that there's something else going on. Again, it's as you need to have a conversation with your own GP about that.
60-year-old male caller started taking supplemental oxygen at night time recently. He's been getting bad headaches since and is wondering, could it be related to that?
Yeah, so I go back and ask the question, why the supplemental oxygen in the first place? There are a few individuals who have long-term serious lung conditions, and the specialists will advise what's called long-term oxygen therapy. So that what they would do is that the person would use supplementary oxygen day and night to try and boost their oxygen levels. Interestingly, where somebody is lacking in oxygen or not getting sufficient oxygen, that in itself can bring on a headache. Whoever prescribed the oxygen for you in the first place is the person to talk to about this. Have a chat with them.
Caller says, I'm suffering with terrible pains in my feet and legs at night when I go to bed. My doctor told me I have peripheral neuropathy.
Yeah.
I also think I've arthritis in my feet and hands. I'm taking Nubit and turmeric. Is there any test or scan that can pinpoint what I have, or any other medicine I could take? I'm a woman in my early 60s.
Yeah, so peripheral neuropathy. So neuropathy firstly means it's a condition where there is something causing pain signals to come from nerve endings. Now, that's as broad as it is. And there are a variety of things that can cause that. There are a number of underlying what we call metabolic disorders and deficiencies of various sorts that can cause it. In truth, the only investigation that will probably tell you whether there is a neuropathy or not, whether there's a problem with the nerves, is a thing called an EMG or an electromyographic study, which is where specialists, and very, very few of them in the country, will put needles into various parts of your body and measure the rate at which electrical signals are transmitted along your nerves. They can tell you definitively whether you have a neuropathy or not. In most cases where there is a neuropathy, what you're looking at ideally is looking to see if there's, what is the underlying problem? Why does the person have this thing in the first place? And then address whatever deficiency there is there and deal with that. There is no good treatment for neuropathy in the sense that beyond that, correcting the underlying problem, the medication, there are a variety of medications that can be used. Now, there is a group of medications that I would put serious caveats around, a group of drugs called the gabapentoids, and they include two drugs, pregabalin and gabapentin. I note that the medical council have recently suggested that these drugs should be put in the same category as morphine and other drugs of addiction, because they have addictive potential themselves. And yet at the same time, this might be one of the few situations where they might have some benefit. And again, that's something you need to talk to a GP about. And separately from your neuropathy, you may well be getting pain from your arthritis, so you may need separately to have treatment for that.
Now, we were talking about HRT earlier on in the programme and the fact that it hasn't been rolled out yet for free to women. And this next question, Eamon, is about HRT. It's from a lady who's 38 and a mother of three. She's, since last November, on two sprays of HRT into the inside of her arm. She says, since I've gone on it, I'm finding it very hard to lose weight. Usually, if I was good food-wise and exercise-wise, the weight would come off very easily. I'm in no way obese, but I need to watch my weight. Would the HRT be the cause of me finding it hard to drop the pounds? Also, the HRT I went on is the HRT the doctors put, is the HRT the doctors put in the Mirena coil, not for contraception, but for my hormone levels. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, there's a couple of things that are, okay, outside my area of expertise is probably the best way I describe it. So let's unpack this. It's unusual, not unheard of, but it's unusual for a woman of 38 to be taking HRT. Typically and more usually, it is an older woman, women into the, who are coming up to the change of life, who will generally need HRT. Now, that doesn't mean to say that you can't have HRT outside that age range. It's just unusual. Secondly, I'm not aware of any form of HRT that generally would be administered by spray. Now, there probably is versions out there, but more usually HRT is administered either as a patch or as a tablet. That being the case, the point is that the spray under the arm, how much of that is actually absorbed into the body? So therefore, how much of that HRT is actually circulating in your system? And that in turn then begs the question, is the amount of impact that's having on your weight. Again, this is a question you need to address to the person who prescribed that HRT for you in the first place, or who gave you the HRT in the first place. They're the people who should be able to answer that question for you.
Okay, Eamon, I know we've gone over time, but we've got loads of questions for you today. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to squeeze in two more, if that's okay.
Sure. Not a problem.
A caller's daughter is 21 and has epilepsy. She's on medication but gets the occasional seizure. Will this go away, or for how long will she have it?
Yeah, the answer is nobody knows. That's the difficulty. There are individuals who will have one ever episode of epilepsy or one seizure in a lifetime and never ever get it again. And there are others then who have repeated seizures. Again, part of the problem is that we don't fully understand why some people get epilepsy and others don't. In truth, what an epileptic seizure is where there's a breakdown or there's a reduction in the amount of insulation between nerve endings, so they short circuit in the brain, and that's what causes the seizure. The medication that's available is to try to increase that threshold so as to make it less likely the person will have a seizure, but there are some individuals who will continue to have seizures. I can't give any, unfortunately, I can't give any assurance in this situation. It would be unreasonable or unfair of me to say to people, oh, you'll grow out of this thing, because you never know on the individual, unfortunately.
And we'll finish where we started on the nose, Eamon. We started with a query about the nose and we'll finish with a query about the nose. This is from a lady who has a blemish on her nose like a scab. She's been prescribed C-I-C-A-P-L-A-S-T, Sisoplast, but it's not helping. And she says the scab is spreading now.
Yeah, I'd be concerned about that. I suspect you'll probably need to be referred to a plastic surgeon for them to examine that probably for you. A growing lesion like that is always a cause for concern.
Okay, so she needs to get that checked out fairly soon, I'd imagine.
Absolutely.
And Eamon, we're gone way over time, and even at that, there's still loads of questions we didn't get around to.
We'll come back to them again next week.
We'll have to come back to them again next week, please God. And thank you so much for all of your expertise.